Hey there, listeners. This is Justin Asiri with a quick announcement before today's episode. If you are listening to this episode live, today is January 8th, 2018, and in just 7 days, 1 week, we are doing our Veterans in Consulting panel. It is not too late to register, and if you are at all even considering consulting, I highly recommend you register for this seminar. As I've said before, we will cover everything you need to know about it, how to get there, just trust me, everything you could possibly want to know about consulting. So make sure you register today. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Thanks and enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with veterans, have them explain to an active duty military audience what it is they do, how they got there, and what advice they'd give to other veterans who want to go in that same direction. Today is episode number 144 with Kristen Sproat-Colley.
A lot of the time veterans have these skill sets, but they don't know how to actually make it relevant for the civilian world. So you might, a lot of people will say, well, I did X, Y, and Z, rather than, you know, I am skilled at A, B, and C because I did X, Y, and Z. And being able to translate what you did into what you can continue doing and what you are capable of is a huge step towards getting a foot in the door at a consulting firm or really any job beyond.
Well, my guest today is also one of the members of the Veterans in Consulting panel. Kristen is awesome. She does a great job of really diving into a lot of nitty-gritty details that I think will be helpful to the Beyond the Uniform community. And she does it in a way that's very interesting, very accessible, and also not boring, which is a hard combination of things to do. A couple reasons I think you might want to listen to today's episode. First of all, what life is like in consulting. She talks about the types of projects she's done. She talks about what her hours are like. I think it'll be very, very interesting if you're considering this as a career path. But even if you're not thinking of consulting, she talks about translating your skill sets, how vital it is to talk about not just what you did in the military, but the skills that you refined and honed in whatever branch of service you served. She's got a lot of great things to talk about there. She talks about preparing for interviews, lots of tangible advice there. And she also talks about a misconception with consulting that I think is also very true in many other fields for veterans. We get into this a little bit in a discussion about veterans expecting to be more senior than they are usually than when they, as opposed to where they actually do start. I think you'll find that interesting regardless of your intended career path. A couple admin items. First of all, if you haven't signed up for our email newsletter, please do so. Starting to send out more surveys, get more feedback from the community. That is my primary vehicle for doing so. Feedback in general is very much appreciated. Any advice on how to make the show better, how to investigate whatever you're interested in doing in your civilian career, I'm all ears. Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Beyond the Uniform, website, however you want to get a hold of me, please do. And on that note, in terms of feedback, if you have positive things to say about the show, I would love for you them to say them for you to say them on iTunes. iTunes reviews are the best way I've found to get word out about this show to help more veterans. So if you take the time to leave a review, you're literally helping other veterans get this information. Show notes for this show are great to check out at beyonduniform.io. We go through a lot of different recommendations. Kristen talks about books. She talks about publications that she does. The publications, I think, are worth looking at for anyone, no matter what career you're going into, just to become more conversant on what's going on in the world, what's going on in business. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Kristen Sproat-Colley. Joining me today in Washington, D.C. is Kristen Sproat-Colley. Kristen, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
So Kristen is a consultant at the Boston Consulting Group in their D.C. office. She started out at the U.S. Naval Academy and earned an M.S. from Oxford University in forced migration. She served as an officer in the Marine Corps for 8 years prior to making her transition to the Boston Consulting Group. At BCG, she has worked on blockchain integration with a global supply chain for a technology company, economic and social strategy implementation for a Middle Eastern government, and foreign business development for a U.S. defense company. So, Kristen, maybe to start things off, if you were talking to someone who's on active duty, how would you explain to them what you do for a living?
Yeah, this is a favorite question, and I know I haven't found that perfect answer yet, but I would say at its core, consulting is really about coming up with optimal solutions for very messy and complex problems. And we generally know that there's approximately a problem, and then we go into the analysis to figure out what are the biggest drivers of those problems, what are the key issues that are causing them, and then starting to come up with what are essentially different courses of action and that are evidence-based and data-based for the most part, and partially based on just the experience across the firm. And then we recommend those to the decision makers within the organization. The entire process is actually similar to the military planning processes, although the day-to-day work often is focused on only like a piece of that, for instance, just the analysis or just the development of the code.
And so when you translate that to kind of day-to-day activities, what does your day-to-day life look like? And feel free to go into as granular detail as you'd like on that.
Okay, yeah. So it varies a lot from project to project, but I will try and give a generic version or something that's kind of more applicable across the board. So we normally travel to the client site for 3 to 4 days a week. So it's a Monday morning, I'll get up early and hop on the plane. But other than that, I'll normally get up around 6:30, go work out. I'm at work by 9, which is either the office or the client site. And then first thing, I'll generally align with my manager on what we're working on that day, what the schedule looks like, if there's any group things we need to do. And then when I get time for myself to start my actual work, I'll either, a couple different things I'll do. I'll have interview phone calls with experts in the area of work that I'm looking into. I'll have discussion periods with the client where we sit down and go over ideas and brainstorm or iterate on whatever the solution for that at that point in time we think is. I'll work on slide content, or I'll interface with some of our support teams, like our knowledge team, for instance, that does research for us. Generally, as a team, we'll get lunch together, chat about whatever's going on. And then after lunch, I'll generally check in with my manager again and say, this is kind of where I am, or get his feedback on what I'm thinking for my next set of steps or any interesting insights that I think I've developed that day. Keep working kind of on the content and the production and the analysis, for instance, or the output on slides that will go to the client eventually. I'll generally grab dinner as a team, and then I'll go back to the hotel, talk to my husband, chill out, and then keep probably finish up work. It depends a lot on the project and what we're doing at that point in time, but trying to finish up around maybe 11 or so. And then I'll make sure we've got a lot of offshore resources, so I'll try and utilize them so that I can, rather than spending my time on slide design, I can utilize them to help me make everything look good overnight and then have it ready to go for the next morning.
Around the clock operation. I love it.
Try and take advantage of it.
What about on the weekends? I know a lot of listeners are always curious to learn about the work-life balance. It sounds like during the week, it can be quite intense. How does that look on the weekends?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So at BCG in the U.S., it's actually been great. When I've worked in the U.S., there were only 2 weekends that I actually worked. Personally, I like to put in maybe an hour or two on Sunday just to plan my week. But there were only 2 weekends I legitimately had to work while I've been in the U.S. Now, I have also done projects overseas, and the attitude changes a bit over there. But BCG is actually very, very good. I think a lot of the consulting firms are realizing now that to keep good people, we want a life as well. So part of it's about setting boundaries for yourself, but generally I've always had a good experience where my weekends are my own.
And I wanted to dive in just to some of the examples that I highlighted, or examples of the projects that I highlighted in the intro. But maybe before we get there, my understanding is typically you will work on a project that spans, maybe 2 months to 12 months on average. And I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit more about how you end up selecting a project, and then if you could give some examples of projects that you've worked on.
Sure. So the different consulting firms have very different models for staffing and for length of project. So at my firm, and I think a lot of the strategy consulting firms, projects can really be anywhere from like 2 weeks to 6 months most of the time. Generally, at least at the entry level, we don't go a lot longer than that. But at some of the other firms, it's much more common they'd be on the same client for a year or more. So I'll just caveat my answer with that, because it's a very specific model that like McKinsey, Bain, BCG use. In terms of how I get those projects, so we're a generalist firm, which means when you come in, you can technically be assigned anywhere. If you have certain skills, then you can, you know, like I work with a lot of people, for instance, who are doctors or have a PhD in, you know, biopharmacology, and then they tend to work in healthcare more, for instance, and they can kind of trend in that direction, but they're not limited to that. So when I came in, for instance, you know, I had a pretty good sense of the military, but I intentionally wanted to try something outside of that. And so I made it known that I only wanted to do private sector work, but I was willing to experiment within that and see what different opportunities there were for the first year of the firm, at least. And so the first couple of projects are really about developing your skill sets, but also matching you with what you're interested in. So we have a staffing coordinator who's kind of like the monitor, the detailer, but much more interested in your actual happiness and things for your life. So I went to her and I said, okay, you know, I'm interested in technology type work. I'd like to be on a travel case. And then we looked at the different options available. I also could have said, you know, I really want to be local, but I don't care what kind of work I'm doing, or I really want to work with this, you know, maybe this set of people. So there are a couple of different options. And basically her job, she came to me and said, you know, there's this handful of different projects out there. And then it's actually a process where she puts you in touch with the person who would be managing you, and you get to have a conversation, and I get to ask a bunch of questions of them about the project and working styles. Same thing, they get to ask me a bunch of questions, and we can both then decide that, does this sound like the right fit? Do I have the right skill set? Do I actually want to work on this? Is it interesting? And then you get matched on a project that way. Now, you don't get to sit around indefinitely, but I do, especially after you've been at the firm for a few months, you do have the opportunity to say, you know, no, that doesn't sound like something I'm interested in, or yes, this is what I really want to do. And so for me, for instance, you know, I was pretty flexible for the first year, and then after a year, I walked into staffing's office and I said, I want to do a project in the Middle East, what's available? And she said, why do you want to do that? But okay. And I promptly got staffed at a public sector case that I really enjoyed. Now I'm going through this process again of identifying where I'm going to wind up. And I went back to staffing and I said, you know, I think I want to do something in public sector or in defense. And they, you know, gave me a couple options. I got to talk to the partners involved. I got to talk to the person I'd be working directly for. And now it's really up to me to say, yes, I think this is the case that I want to be in on, or no, that's, you know, this isn't the case. I think I'd rather wait for something else, or actively look for something else. So it's both, there's somebody who, you know, meets the needs of the firm, but it's also, it can be networking, and it can be, you know, me finding a good group of people I like working with. And as long as they're still selling work, they'll keep me working for them. So it's a good balance of having somebody to help support you, but also being able to take things into your own hands and having some agency to find the work that you actually like.
I love that. I love that crisp description too. And, you know, one of the things I think that might appeal to listeners on active duty about consulting is, you know, from my standpoint, Kristen, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. It sounds like a reason this is appealing is you get lots of mini jobs. It's almost like having eight different jobs within a 2 year time frame. And I love how you're able to, because this is what I think, you know, a lot of people approach a job search where it's, are you going to prioritize the functional role that you're doing? Are you going to prioritize the industry or the location or the team? And in each case, you're able to refine that and say like, hey, I really like technology. I want to do that again. Or I've ruled out technology as something I like. I would rather focus on something else. And so it allows you very, very rapidly to get an immense amount of work experience and hopefully refine exactly where you want to dedicate your time in terms of cultivating specific skills.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the best things about it and that I like. And you're right. You know, I think I've had probably seven projects or so, plus a couple help on proposals over a two-year period. And exactly, I could try out a bunch of things, see if I liked them, and then say, no, I liked them, but actually my passion does still lie in this other area. Let me go back to that. Let me, and it's, you know, it's really up to me to be able to say, this is what I want. This is where I want to go. Am I actually like making inroads in the right, with the right people? And then pursue a passion that way. And even within that, you know, there's so many different types of problems that it's never the same thing twice. You know, every company, every client is different, and the types of issues they face are different. So even if it's the same client, it's always a new set of problems, a new analysis that has to be done, a new set of clients to work with. It's a really fascinating set of work that I really enjoy.
That's great. And the team size, when you think back on those 8 projects, what does the typical team look like and how are you interacting with them on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. So it varies quite drastically. I've had a project where it was myself and then a project leader, which is the kind of a first line manager, and then one other person at my skill level. And then we were the only people interacting every day, the three of us, and then reporting to working for a partner whom we'd see a couple times a week. And then I've also had a project where we were 25 people probably, and it was me and maybe 3 other people of my skill set reporting to a manager and then to a project leader, and then there was an individual above him, and then there were a couple partners on the team, and then there was the client. So it varies pretty drastically, just depending on what you're doing and the size of the project overall, and you know how many, how long it is, and how drastic a change it is. So it's really, there's benefits and drawbacks to both being on a small team or a big team. Some people only like the bigger teams and only like the longer projects, and some people like the other models as well. So it gives you, it's just another factor to optimize for when you're looking for projects that you want to be on.
That's great. And so maybe to, and I just love the way that you're explaining each of these things. Maybe if you could think of one of the projects you've done and maybe just kind of drill down into, I know you can't go into specific details, but just the 2-minute version of what that project was like, what you guys were hired to figure out and how that process went.
Sure. So I'll start with the blockchain one, because that's a hot topic right now. And I think that's also the most different to what military members are used to. This was one of my first projects, so it was a pretty steep learning curve. So I'll start with that, and then maybe we can go on to one of the other ones. But so we were hired by a technology client. This was about a year and a half ago, who was interested in figuring out different uses of blockchain. And blockchain is the technology that sits behind Bitcoin. And in the short version is basically when you put information on the blockchain, it is impossible to falsify it. And so it's not necessarily about the money, but it's about how there's a catalog and a record of information transmitted over time. And our job was to A, learn about what another blockchain is, and then B, think about how it could be used in the international supply chain and global trade system. And think big picture, 20 years down the line, if there was a database built on this blockchain technology, how could we use it in international trade? And what sort of products could the client actually create based on this database? And come up with answers for 20 years down the road and then for 5 years down the road. And if they decided to pursue one of those 5-year products, then what are the steps they would have to take to actually implement them? So I got to work with experts on blockchain and learn all about how that works, work with experts on international shipping, got to go visit a shipyard and see how things come in from China and get offloaded and all the paperwork that works with all the containers coming in. And then figure out not only how you marry those two practically, but also who the potential customers down the road could be. Or there could governments want to pay for this information to do counter-smuggling? Could other companies want to pay for this information to help better understand their own supply chains and integration? So we put together a couple product ideas and then kind of back planned into the short term, in 5 years, what does this look like? And then what sort of steps does the client need to take to get there? And so it was a really interesting mix of technology and business and kind of long-term strategy and then short-term strategy as well.
I love that too, because, you know, these companies are not hiring a company like Boston Consulting Group because they're not intelligent or not capable. Like, these are incredibly complex problems that you're talking about solving. And one thing I think that a lot of veterans would appreciate is, I think especially on the officer side, you're not really ever the subject matter expert. You're having to go to lots of people and learn very quickly and take that information and do something with it. What you described sounds similar to that, where you're talking to these blockchain experts and you're talking to different people to really synthesize all this information and come up with one cohesive solution or answer or direction, which sounds analogous to the work that a lot of people have done in the military.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's one of the things we get asked a lot as consultants. You know, you're an outsider, you don't know the company, how can you possibly solve the problems that, you know, the company is not sure about? And it's not that we're any smarter or that, you know, we are more capable as individuals than the best and brightest in the companies. It's that we can bring a different lens and a different focus and an ability to quickly understand what's important, get up to speed using the resources of the firms and doing research quickly, and then working with the client to kind of fill in our knowledge gaps, and then come up with the actual potential solutions. It's really a problem-solving role, and the skill sets needed to break down a problem into its components, understand what the key components are, and then brainstorm solutions is the skill set that we bring. And you lay that on top of a client's detailed knowledge, and that's what actually gets you to a good set of solutions.
And in that example, with the blockchain integration, do you have any insight into what they did with those recommendations? I've heard one of the complaints about consulting, especially for veterans, is because we're so operationally focused, it can be strange to come up with a recommendation but never actually implement and never actually see what happens. And I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on that, and then in this specific case, if you ended up seeing what happened with that recommendation.
Yeah, definitely. I would say this is another thing that's different between the different types of consulting firms. So that is one of the complaints around strategy consulting firms, is that we come up with these ideas and we hand them off, and then you don't really know what actually happens to it. You don't get to sit around and see it implemented. Some consulting firms do more of the implementation, and I would say if veterans are interested in, if you know you like that, then look for one of the firms that is focused on implementation. I know for me personally, I loved the planning process, so that's why I stick with the, as nerdy as that sounds, that's why I stick with the strategy firms. In terms of actually seeing what happens, I would say, so in this specific case, I've started to see our recommendations be implemented, and I've seen articles about it in the Wall Street Journal, on TV, and it's really gratifying to actually see those recommendations implemented and know that that was something that we came up with in an office in New York and were able to suggest to the client. And I would say, in the other cases that I've done too, you don't always see the recommendations implemented. Sometimes the client doesn't like them and won't move forward with them. Sometimes it's just, it's not the right time. But most of the projects I've worked on, I've seen or heard of the implementation after the fact. It's very gratifying.
That's great. And then maybe just for contrast, could you share one more project and kind of what that looked like?
Sure. So I worked for, maybe this one will hit home a little more with veterans, but I worked for a U.S. defense company that's setting up a subsidiary in the Middle East. And they've got a brand new subsidiary out there, and they've been operating in the region for a while, but there's a lot more new business development that has to happen. And so they had a very small team, but they needed extra help. So I went in and helped them figure out, okay, in this region, who are the key stakeholders that we need to be thinking about? We have a client have a strategy. How do we actually accomplish that strategy by meeting the right people? And how do we keep this brand new team that's in this foreign country on board and doing the right meetings and the right cadence of interacting with the right people in this foreign context to actually achieve the elements of that strategy. And then how do we design the organization, because it's a brand new organization? How do we bring the right people on board, and who do those people need to be, again, in order to accomplish that strategy that had been set out? And so there were a lot of different pieces of this. There was some research piece. There was some understanding the cultural context, both of the foreign country as well as of the client, and then being able to work directly with the CEO of the subsidiary to make recommendations and help him start implementing things that he just had not been familiar with before and didn't have the bandwidth or the personnel to actually get this company up and running.
That's great. And I want to rewind a little bit and talk a little bit more about how you made the transition to Boston Consulting Group. But I just want to give listeners some context. I did some research on this, and when it comes to a top three consulting firm, which is by Forbes magazine considered to be McKinsey, Boston Consulting Group, Bain, when I looked at the data on LinkedIn, less than 7% of veterans are able to go directly from active duty to one of those firms. 84% end up going to school, usually an MBA program, and then about 9% end up going to industry and working for a little while and then doing that transition. So I'm particularly fascinated, Kristen, because I think that you're at the extreme of someone who is able to pull off what seems like from an outside perspective to be exceptionally difficult. And I'm curious what you did while on active duty that helped prepare you for this transition.
Sure. So I got my master's immediately after college like you said, forced migration and refugee studies. So nothing that has to do with business in any way, shape, or form. It was very useful in the Marine Corps, but not necessarily the content doesn't necessarily transfer to what I work on in BCG, although the critical thinking skill sets definitely do. And so for me, when I was looking at getting out of the Marine Corps and trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I knew that my last job in the Marine Corps was as an information operations planner, so doing a lot of flying in, augmenting staff to do problem framing and come up with COAs for information operations to augment their scheme of maneuver, I knew I really liked that type of problem solving. And when I was looking at getting out of the military, I was looking at going to back to school, business school or something else, but I wasn't really sure. And when I realized that, or when I learned about consulting and realized that it had the same sort of kind of thought process as what I had enjoyed doing in the military, I figured it would be a good fit. And for me, the fact that I had actually worked in that sort of, in that realm previously was critical, I think, to me actually getting in and a foot in the door and getting a job with BCG, because I was able to say, I know how to look at a problem and break it down into its components. I know how to look at data and actually do analysis on it. I know how to identify the key drivers and then bring them to the commander and say, okay, this is the problem and what we need to fix. And then I know how to work with the staff and a bunch of other people to say, what are the potential solutions? What are our left and right lateral limits? Which one do we think we should recommend and for what reason? And then being able to communicate that to a commander, to a decision maker, about why that's the decision they need to make. And being able, A, having this experience, but also B, being able to translate my experience in the military to civilian terms and make it meaningful for a civilian firm, I think was important. Because I see a lot of the time veterans have these skill sets, but they don't know how to actually make it relevant for the civilian world. So a lot of people will say, well, I did X, Y, and Z, rather than, I am skilled at A, B, and C because I did X, Y, and Z. And being able to translate what you did into what you can continue doing and what you are capable of is a huge step towards getting a foot in the door at a consulting firm or really any job beyond, because it's those skill sets that the firms really want to know about. And when they can see that you've developed things that are directly applicable to the civilian world, that's when they can see you as a potential employee. So I think that initially set me up very well. More specifically, what I did to get me prepped for consulting was really mostly preparing for the interview process, which is different than your standard job interview. And so I spent a bunch of time doing that sort of preparation. And then just talking with other veterans who were already in my target firms and going from there.
That's great. I thought that was a beautiful job of even when you were talking about how you were preparing information for the commanding officer and just kind of laying out what you did in the military in a context that makes sense for a civilian audience. And I completely agree with what you're saying. It's kind of incumbent on each veteran to spoon feed the hiring manager, whether it's in consulting or whatever else, being able to show them the skills that you possess that are applicable to the job to which you're applying, and telling that story of how you put that to work in the military. So I think that's really, really fantastic how you articulated that. I'm wondering, what was, you talked a little bit about preparing for the interview. Could you take us through, could you take us through how you applied to the Boston Consulting Group and then what the actual interview process looked like?
Sure. So when I started doing my research, I narrowed down my focus to 5 different firms that I was interested in. And I took a 2-pronged approach. One, I went to the Service Academy Career Conference in DC, which happens once a year. And a couple of the firms were there and I was able to chat with recruiters directly, which helped. The other prong that I took that I think was just as much, if not more helpful, was identifying people that I knew that were already working at those companies and could introduce me to others. So I had one friend whom I had deployed with several years prior, who got out, gone to business school, was just got accepted into one of the firms, and he was instrumental in getting me up to speed, helping me figure out how I needed to prep, and then doing the practice interviews with me and whatnot, and then connecting me with other people at other firms to help me out as well. And so having that veterans connection and leveraging that common background, I think is really critical, because most of these firms that have veterans networks, they tend to be very supportive and want to help. We want to help each other out and give each other a leg up over time. And so what I did to actually prep for the interviews, so there's 2 pieces of each interview. There's a case interview, and then there's the fit portion, we call it. And the fit portion is more similar to what you're traditionally used to in an interview. Tell me about a time that you had to take a difficult decision or showed leadership skills or whatever that might be. And that requires preparation. You have to have a ready answer that you can tailor that shows you being in the situation but is also engaging for your interviewer. That takes some preparation. But there's also this case interview piece, which is different than really any other interview process. And basically what a case interview is your interviewer will give you a very generic question. It could be, for instance, from one of the practice cases I did was, our client is a new firm that's looking at sending tourists into space for 15-minute flights. How many people do you think are interested and how much should they charge? And that's it. And that's a huge problem when you sit there and think about it. It's kind of overwhelming. But what it does is it forces you to break down a problem into the components and figure out how to actually do the analysis and ask the right questions to get to a reasonable answer. And so I learned through reading a couple books and then doing a whole bunch of practice interviews, how to actually break down a very large nebulous problem like that into a set of clearly defined questions and data that I would want, and then answers to move on. So there were a couple books that I read, did a bunch of practice interviews on my own, practice cases on my own, and then moved into practice cases with veterans. And it probably took me about 2.5 months of work after work every night, prep work, to actually kind of get up to speed. And because I didn't have a business background, also learning basic business terminology. Nothing crazy, nothing that I would have needed an MBA for, but you have to understand, okay, profit equals revenue minus costs. What are the components of revenue? What are the components of costs? How do I understand these basic terms, essentially, so that I can apply them to these problems?
How many cases do you think you did in practice prior to your actual interview?
I don't know. By myself, I probably did – at least 30, 40 with somebody else. I probably did maybe 10, I would say. Just enough to, you've got to get comfortable and you have to know that you enjoy the process. And you have to get past the, you know, the initial kind of awkwardness of thinking on the fly and thinking out loud and very quickly interacting with your interviewer. But once you do, it's not too difficult.
And I imagine that the process of preparing for the case interviews is indicative of, at least an approximation, if you would like the work, because if you like that framework of approaching a problem and breaking it down and thinking through it, that is an approximation of what you're going to be doing as a consulting. So it seems like during that practice and preparation phase, it's also the vetting process of like, hey, do I really want to do this?
Yeah, I definitely think that's accurate. And again, it probably varies between the different types of firms, but I have found that, yeah, the process of breaking something into the framework of key questions you need to ask, figuring out what the data is that you need to ask for, figuring out where you're trying to go with the answer, I found it very similar. And when I, even though the practice cases were not necessarily content that was intriguing to me, the process itself of problem solving was. And that's translated, I think, very well into what I actually do.
And you mentioned a couple books. Do you remember the titles of the books or which books you would recommend to listeners?
Sure. So there's two big ones that I think most people read, and that is the first one is Case in Point by Mark Cosentino. And the second one is Case Interview Secrets by Victor Cheng. There's a third one I did, Cracking the Case System by David Orville, I think, which just had a lot of practice cases. And then I had a couple buddies who were in business school who were able to share their practice cases, because the business schools will have their own clubs that do cases as well. And so they shared with me their practice cases, and that's what I primarily worked off of.
That's great. And I'm wondering, have you at this point yet, have you been involved in any interviewing, like on the other side of actually interviewing candidates?
So I've done the mock interviews, the practice versions. I'm just going to be starting getting into the actual interviews in the new year.
I was just curious, just offhand, if you have done maybe mock or practice interviews with veterans, if you have any thoughts on kind of common mistakes people make, or if when you're talking with vets about consulting, any common misconceptions they may have about this career path?
That's a great question. I don't think that there's common issues I've seen during the practice interviews. I would say, I think maybe one of the common misconceptions / frustrations for veterans who come into consulting is, you know, we're used to leading a bunch of people, doing this problem solving, running operations, making recommendations to leadership. And then to come into consulting initially, you expect that you're going to be doing a lot of that same stuff. And the first year or so is not. It's getting the understanding of how the firms work. It's knowing how to do the analysis in detail the way you're expected to in consulting, which is a lot of digging into data, a lot of refining presentations in a way that veterans normally don't. We're used to communicating, what is the bluff? It doesn't matter if I have two boxes that are misaligned, but the commander needs to know X, Y, and Z. And kind of readjusting your understanding of which aspects of communication are important, and disciplining yourself to adjust to the culture of a firm is sometimes a little bit tough for veterans, I think, and it takes a little while to kind of warm up to that and get over that hump. Plus, you're simultaneously adjusting to the fact that you don't have people working for you anymore. You are expected to be interacting with the client. You do have some responsibilities overseeing different knowledge resources, or you might have a brand new summer associate that's working for you, but it's not quite the same. And it takes a couple years to get back to a point of being in a normal management position that we're used to. So it doesn't mean there's no opportunities for leadership or no opportunities for management prior to that. But sometimes veterans will come in thinking, well, I already did all these great things. I should be more advanced. But the truth is we're really good at some stuff and we also kind of suck at some other stuff. So you've got to get past that initial learning hump. And then kind of once you hit your stride and get going, that's when the veteran skill sets really start to shine. And I think we start to feel more comfortable.
That's great. You know, it's funny. I would echo everything you just said for the MBA as well, because I think my experience was you spend 2 years doing cases and kind of acting as if you're CEO of this major company, and then you go out of the into the workforce. And most of my classmates are working for the person who graduated from business school 4 years ago. And it's you know, that right. desire to be at the top, and you it takes a while to get there. And I can imagine for myself and for most veterans, when you walk into that job, like you're itching and you have done incredible things. Like you've been in command of a warship, you've been, you know, in charge of a squadron, and then to kind of have to be more in the operator, doer, analyst position rather than the person calling the shots can be a little bit jarring. And at this, I like how you articulated that, because it's like, and you need some seasoning to get exposure to those other aspects to really be a competent manager. And that's why it takes a couple of years to get to that position.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I have found as well, like, because we do shine at some things, we end up getting put into positions more quickly as long as you can meet those other requirements. For instance, vets tend to be good at briefing. We tend to be good at interacting with senior leadership. So, you know, I have often found myself interacting with very senior leadership that I didn't necessarily expect, and having the full confidence of my team and the partners to do so when they may not have expected or wanted, you know, the average person to take on that role. So, you know, it's both ways. It's just a matter of being patient and recognizing that, oh, actually, we don't have a million skill sets. We don't know everything. We just have to work slowly on some of them and then take advantage of the others.
That's great. That's great. For the time that you've been in consulting so far, what are some trends that you see in terms of what people do afterwards? So like there's one path where someone remains within consulting. If you could maybe talk about kind of the typical career path there, but then other kind of maybe common options that you see people take when they leave the firm to do something else.
Sure. So for people who stay in consulting, you start at the level of being the one that's doing the analysis, putting the slides together. And then you move on to your initial management role where you'll have a team of a few people under you. You're responsible for managing the partners and the client and the team and then the budget all simultaneously. And then after you master that, you start moving into more of the proposal work and the selling side of things. And so not only are you managing projects and their output, but you're managing how do we pull in more business in the first place. And then once you actually hit partner, then that continues to shift a little bit more. You're very much responsible for selling work, for managing that client relationship entirely, and for making sure that your teams, plural, are delivering on that content and the promises that you made to the client. And the timeline to get from consultant to partner varies pretty dramatically. It's normally roughly, and it varies between the firms what the different titles are as well. So maybe about 10 years, I'll give you an approximate, but it definitely can be longer than that, sometimes shorter than that. So the people who leave consulting, and it's quite frequent. A lot of people only come for 2 years to get the skill sets and then want to move on elsewhere. It's just expected. It's not like the military where you get shamed because you might want to get out sooner. Here, if that's what you want to do, you're encouraged because the firms also know you might come back and be a client one day. So communal dismissal of you if you actually decide to leave. And so I've seen a lot of people will go try their hand at an operations role where they actually have some sort of profit and loss statement that they're responsible for, especially people who haven't necessarily done that before. I think veterans, we've managed people before. We've done the operation side of things. So some people miss that and want to go back to it. A lot of people in consulting have never done that before and want to try their hand at it. Some people will move into corporate strategy roles, and a lot of the Fortune 500 companies, a lot of bigger companies will have strategy sections where they recruit people directly into from consulting. And a lot of people go into startups, and you know, once they get basic business experience, they understand basic problem solving from a consultant's viewpoint. They want to go try their hand at whatever that new startup is or that their friend is doing, or, you know, pursue their own dreams like that. So I'd say those are probably the main exit paths that I've seen.
That's great. That's really exceptional. One other question I wanted to ask about, so you already talked, and I'll add these in the show notes for listeners, about Case in Point, Case Interview Secrets, Cracking the Case Systems. Is there any other resources that have helped you in your civilian career that could be book, podcasts, movies, anything that you would recommend to listeners as they think of making that transition from active duty to a civilian career?
So I would say just in general, being kind of aware of life outside of the military bubble. So for me, a lot of it was reading The Economist every week, so I know what's happening. Starting to read The Wall Street Journal, so I not only understand the economy, but how the role businesses play in it. Listening to the NPR Marketplace report on my way home from work in the afternoon. Like, just starting to get immersed in kind of that knowledge. Don't need to know specifics. You don't need to be able to rattle off what the Dow Jones is doing this week. Definitely not. But just to kind of understand, what are common problems in the economy? What are different industries doing? Are, you know, the airlines facing problems right now? Are the, you know, what is going on with tech companies in terms of Bitcoin or whatever? Like, just having that general knowledge and understanding kind of the economic landscape allows you to know a little bit more about the context that potential clients will be facing. And it allows you to interact in a way that your interviewers will understand, because they're not familiar with military background. And although they're incredibly interested in it, I found I had great conversations about what I did in the military with my peers and with my interviewers during the process. They also need to know that you can move into a client site and have a conversation about you know, the latest trends at that client. And so you're not expected to know before you go necessarily, but you need to know enough about what's going on outside of the national security world to actually have a reasonable conversation with somebody.
That's great. That's great. Well, I always like to reserve the last question as open-ended, and that's just that we've covered a lot of great answers to questions that I asked, but I'm sure there's things that you'd like to talk about or share that I haven't asked about. And so, knowing that you've got an audience of people on active duty or people recently transitioned, any final words of wisdom to share with them?
I would say, think very critically about what it is you bring to the table. And this goes back to what I talked about in terms of being able to translate your skill sets into something that is tangible and meaningful for really anybody. This isn't just consulting, but any business or interviewer you're looking at going to, or, you know, like potential clients one day. And being able to explain what those skill sets are, and then identify your weaknesses, know you need to work on them, and then know what your strengths are as well, and take advantage of those and push to take advantage of those whenever you possibly can. I think allows you to both be humble and advance yourself, but also capitalize on the depth of knowledge and experience that we do have and that we do bring to the table. And just about every veteran that I've met and come across has a couple core skill sets, whether it's being able to communicate to senior leadership or being able to project confidence in a room full of senior people. It's those are more intangible, but just as critical. And those types of things shouldn't be ignored or shouldn't be forgotten when you're putting together a resume or discussing why you fit in a certain company or a certain employer going forward.
That's great, Kristen. Well, I appreciate your time and your perspective on this, and I just really appreciate the crispness with which you talk about each of the topics. I think that you really do a great job of painting this picture for listeners of what life looks like in your shoes and kind of what the landscape looks like. And what is sticking out to me is the piece that you talked about preparing for consulting. It makes it vivid, but it also makes it achievable. Like what you were describing in reading, you know, three books and reading three different publications and doing 40 to 60 practices and finding people you knew who could introduce you to people. That's, you know, on the one hand, that's a monumental undertaking. And on the other hand, I hope listeners realize that that is very achievable. That's like very, it demystifies that process. And I just appreciate your candor on all of this and the level of detail you went into, which I know is really helpful for listeners.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I was only successful coming into consulting because I had veterans who were willing to put their time out there to help me out and give me those practice interviews and answer my questions. And honestly, I had never even heard of consulting until, you know, a couple months or, you know, 6 months before I was looking at transitioning. And it's all worked out really well for me. So I'm happy to be able to try and pass on some of the suggestions and help other people who might actually want to follow the same path, because I think it's a really good path to follow.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kristen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Surface, surface, surface.
All right. Thank you for listening to my interview with Kristen. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that if you're thinking of consulting, you are joining us on the Vets in Consulting seminar coming up. Yeah, that's all. I guess I'll plug a couple resources that I really am big fans of. American Corporate Partners, great for connecting you with mentors. The Service to School Organization, great for connecting you with schools and helping you figure that out. Both are absolutely free for you as a veteran. Both, I don't get anything for plugging this, so you know it's 100% genuine. I 100% believe in both of those organizations because I've seen the difference they make in a lot of vets on the show, like Hank Hughes, who was mentored by George Lucas himself through American Corporate Partners. That's all for this week. I'll be back next week with more interviews with veterans talking about their civilian career. Have a great week and be safe.